Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Press Coverage. Kind of a different time, which does work out well. It's a long weekend in the United States, although neither the host or the guest are from the U.S. But it's okay. Everyone who's celebrating their vacation and their holiday can celebrate this. But my guest for this week is Mags, co-host of the Dynasty Rewind or the Wildcat Rewind. And Dynasty Hot Seat creator and host. So Mags, is it hot enough for you this time of year?
Oh, in the UK at the minute, it's like blistering heat, but we're not great with the heat, to be honest, Kyle. We're anything over 18 degrees Celsius, I'm in trouble. Like I'm in serious trouble today. It was pushing 20 degrees Celsius today, so I was in serious trouble.
Oh, yeah, I think it's over 20 here, which I guess, again, the people in the States listening have no idea what we're talking about with Celsius, but I can relate to you with that, because usually when people talk weather, I'm like trying to do the math in my head. Oh, yeah. Ooh, that is cold. Yeah. It's not like, you know, when they say, oh, it's 40 degrees, it's like, oh, that sounds incredibly hot. And then you realize, oh, wait, that's actually pretty nice.
Yeah, I don't understand the Fahrenheit. Any kind of temperature seems too hot in Fahrenheit, though. I'm glad I'm not using that.
Well, I guess a little funny tidbit is, just, you know, converting from Fahrenheit to Celsius or converting time zones, even apparently it's quite tricky. So, an hour earlier than originally previewed, happy to be here, Mags, and I'm happy to finally get to talk with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Great to be here.
Yeah. And I guess, the premise of this episode would be really, you know, the people of Going for Two Live will get to know you and, you know, we start at the very start. And what were your first sports memories? Since, you know, Going for Two and fantasy football, we're a sports show. So where does sports start for you?
Yeah. Well, first of all, by the way, Going for Two, like every kind of show you do, the intro music is always like absolutely spot on. Like, love that again for the show. So you guys do a kick-ass job with that for sure. And my first sporting memory, well, watching, I think the first thing I really remember about watching any kind of sport would be the 1998 football or soccer, whatever you want to call it, World Cup. And I distinctly remember watching Brazil play Scotland. That's a real, like, memory stuck in my head. So obviously I live in Scotland now, originally from Ireland, so I had no real allegiances. And then obviously seeing this Brazil team just turn up with these amazing players, it's like, team playing in bright yellow, like all the skills, all the flair, like everything like that. I just kind of fell in love with it then. And then watching the rest of that World Cup with France winning and Zinedine Zidane and the whole thing that happened with Ronaldo in the final. If you don't know, look it up. Really great documentaries all about what happened with Brazilian Ronaldo in the final.
I was going to say, let's specify which Ronaldo, because some people might be confused there.
Yeah, no, not Cristiano, the OG Ronaldo, the guy that came before. Cristiano, whole like controversies about what happened. Great watching to catch up on it now if you don't know what happened. But yeah, 1998 World Cup is my first real, like, vivid memory of watching sports. In terms of playing, I've kind of played sports like my entire life. I've played, you know, soccer. I've played Gaelic football, which is like the national sport of Ireland where I grew up. A really cool sport where it's kind of a combination of a couple of different sports together. It's kind of hard to describe. Again, go look it up and watch some highlight clips. You'd be like, oh, damn, like it's pretty hard hitting. It's pretty cool. Rugby, played a lot of rugby when I was growing up as well. Just, yeah, lots of sports sort of playing from a young age, really. So I've kind of had sports around me my entire life.
It's funny. Each country has its own sort of, everyone will play this when they're young. And I mean, the first thing you mentioned was football or soccer. You know, UK, that makes sense. I think in America it's probably baseball. I know in Canada it's hockey for sure. So
yeah, absolutely. Everybody plays that. And then the Gaelic football thing's a more niche thing for Ireland. Well, about half of Ireland, but we'll not get into Irish politics. That's a whole other show.
Yeah, we'll not dive too far south there. This conversation. I guess again, Going for Two, we're a fantasy sports channel, primarily a lot of fantasy sports content. So what did you first transition from watching and playing sports to participating in fantasy sports?
That was in high school. again, it was more like soccer based, the fantasy Premier League kind of things, and there was just like a school tournament. You signed up for it, and then there's a leaderboard, and the whole school like got ranked from start to finish. I think it came top 10 once. I was pretty pleased with myself, but back then I was not as good as I am today at excuse me, like putting aside like my Homer biases. Like, so I'm a big Liverpool fan, so I just pick all the Liverpool players and just like put them in my team. I like no matter how terrible they were, I was like Stefan Onsho, like get him in, like terrible player, but I'm like get him in my team. So I wouldn't do well because of that, but you live and learn, you grow. So now I'm able to set my Homer biases aside when I'm setting my fantasy lineups each week, and I'm not just ramming Kansas City Chiefs players everywhere I can look.
Although to be fair, at this point, a couple of years ago, if you had only Rams players, you probably would have done well, like the Brandon Cooks, Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp era with Goff there. Like if you had just taken Rams players, you probably would have been good. And now if you just take Chiefs players, you probably have a good baseline. But most teams aren't so gracious to have that
No.
type of firepower.
No, absolutely not. But I mean, go from that, like transitioning into. Like there's not really, I don't really do any other, I still do Fantasy Premier League, and I do obviously fantasy stuff with the NFL. I don't really do any, I know some people, do like fantasy baseball. I assume there's fantasy hockey. I'm not really sure. But I'm not really into too many other fantasy sports. The fantasy, NFL kind of stuff, football that way. That actually came just a couple of years ago. One of my mates, I was chatting like to a colleague of mine, one of my good friends I work with, and I was chatting to his friend at a barbecue, and he was like, "Oh, we do like fantasy football for the NFL." I was like, "Oh, sweet!" Like, because in the UK, it's kind of like there's not a lot of guys that like know about like fantasy football. There's not a lot of people that watch the NFL really to start with. Never mind know about fantasy football. So I just needed to kind of get my foot in the door a couple of years ago, and yeah, thankfully I got an invite into a league and never looked back.
And to be fair, though, I think that the game is sort of growing more globally because I've seen more just UK-based people making fantasy content. I mean, you guys at the Rewind, Fantasy Sanctuary, Rich, and the stuff they do. So it seems like it's all the sports are getting more global. Basketball, the global impact of basketball has been huge, and hockey, we're slowly getting there. But yeah, I've played fantasy hockey in the past. I've only done one like regular season. And that was, I found that to be quite long. I think that's the appeal of NFL fantasy football is the once a week lineups. And I guess with the Premier League, you only have what, 40 games through a season. You have the, I guess you can maybe have 2 games a week, but the idea of the weekly lineups make it more appealing, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. The UK's coming on. We've got two Scott Fishbowl drafts this year. We're coming on two live drafts in London, and who knows, maybe even more if things fill up. And I've not got my invite yet for 13 though, so I've booked my accommodation, I've booked my train down for the live draft. So I'm really hoping I get the invite into it.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I haven't got my invite either yet, but I'm not doing a live one. But yes, hopefully, come on, if Scott, if you're listening, make sure to get Mags in.
Yeah, Scott, come
Let's
on.
put him on the hot seat. And
Yeah, who else? Ryan McDowell, he's a teacher, right? Come on, Ryan.
And Ryan's been on the show before, so I have an in with Ryan apparently.
Perfect.
But you clearly host a podcast because that was such a great transition. Because the next question is, where did you first get the inclinations to want to be a teacher?
Yeah, so I sort of mentioned that, I kind of grew up playing a lot of sports. One of the ones I was really like probably like the most talented with, I suppose, would be sort of whole way through high school. I played a lot of badminton, like kind of up to like a national kind of standard. Like was on the Irish team and like the Ulster team for Northern Ireland as well. So as part of that, you kind of got given things like your coaching like license. I got given like a free coaching course, got to do that for free, whereas normally it would cost like hundreds of pounds. So that was nice. And then I did like a couple of coaching sessions at like my local club. I was like, this is pretty cool. And I was getting towards the age where I was like, I was applying for university. And even though I like teaching like the sports aspect, I wish should have maybe before that I had have, chosen PE as one of my subjects in school. Because to be a PE teacher in the UK, you have to have that PE. Like we call them GCSEs and A levels. I don't know what you guys call them in Canada, but it's like your final like two sets of exams before you get out of high school. So then it was kind of like, well, do I have enough passion about the four like A levels I was doing, which was, ICT, English literature, it was religion, actually, believe it or not, I studied religion. And then I did the fourth one with was politics. So it's like, do I really have an interest to teach that all day, every day? It's like, not really. So it kind of led me down the route of like being a primary teacher or an elementary teacher, whatever you want to call it. And I just went all in. I had five slots to apply for, and I'd all five just applied for elementary school teaching and all five slots. So it's just like, I'm going all in on this. This is what I want to do.
Awesome. Yeah. So the which again, we've talked about sports, the idea of coaching first does kind of make a lot of sense and seems like it would be a
Yeah.
common path for quite a few people who again are in this fantasy sphere with us.
Absolutely, yeah. And you said something about you're able to like you can go and teach PE right in Canada, but you can also go teach like primary and elementary school as well.
Yeah, and I think yeah, our the way our school boards are divided by region, but then also by English, French,
Yeah.
Catholic, non-Catholic, and within those divisions, you can kind of move within your school board. You'd have to apply to each individual school board to get in on those
Gotcha.
lists, but once you're in, you can technically do both. Now,
Ooh.
as part of doing the education courses in university, you do choose a I guess a section we'll call it. The
Yeah.
junior, I think there's three different variants. You can do junior, or I guess there's four variants: junior, primary, intermediate, and senior. And then
Yeah.
whatever one you end up going, that's where you'll be more likely to get long-term contracts and permanent positions. But from a
Yeah.
supply teaching standpoint, they'll put you on the list, and you could teach at any level.
Cool.
And I mean, if there's not enough teachers at wanting a certain position, you could get in without all the full qualifications. They'll obviously put the person who's fully qualified first. Like,
Yeah.
I noticed you've got the guitar. We'll talk about music in a bit. One of the main subjects I took in university for teaching, well, the two were music and history. So
Cool.
my first non-supply, my first contract teaching position was a music position that I got pretty early on within getting into the board, only a few months in, because not a lot of people have music as a qualified teachable subject. So
Yeah.
that's an example of where they'll prioritize those qualifications. But then, if no one has it, then they'll go to experience and so things like that. So yeah, we seem to be a little more liberal with who can teach where, or it seems like it's really
Yeah.
stringent in the UK.
Yeah, very much so. Like it's got even more stringent as of late. Like you have to apply for like certain councils, and like if you don't get a permanent position there, then they won't allow. And you're not even really at the minute, like new teachers coming in, they're kind of told where they're going to teach. They don't really get a choice. They're like, you're going to teach here. So it's kind of like, oh, okay, it's a bit stringent. And don't tell anyone, but it's just an inflatable guitar. It's not,
Okay.
it's not, I can play this one about as well as I can play a real guitar, to be honest with you, as
Oh,
well. But I do like
okay.
music. Yeah, we'll chat about music later, but I'm just not musically talented, sadly.
Okay. I was wondering, because I've always liked your intros, like the hot seat intros, pretty hot track, and I wondered if that was you that did that
Yeah.
yourself or.
Oh, I should tell people that though. Absolutely.
To be fair, I've always thought it did kind of look weird. Like that does look like it's a bass, but then it looks like it has six. Like it looks like it's thicker like a bass, but then it looks like it has six heads. So I was always really confused, like what that actually was. So I was going to ask, like, what actually is that behind you? Now I know. So thank you. Thanks for
Yeah,
revealing all the
inflatable
answers, right?
is the cheapest inflatable guitar with flames on it you can buy on Amazon.
Got it. Hey, it's all about the visuals, right? For the hot seat.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I guess I was going to ask you when you first entered the teaching profession and what like your first positions teaching, like do you remember what that was like, your first times in a classroom?
Yeah, so I moved from Ireland over to Edinburgh. In 2009 to study primary teaching. It was a 4-year course. So I graduated in 2013, but sort of as I'm sure you do overseas as well, we had to do sort of placements in between. So like my first year, my first placement was actually in a nursery. So what you call a kindergarten, right? So it was kind of a weird introduction to teaching because it was very much like I don't know what a cycle for there, but here, like the nurseries are very much like free play, like go outside, build things, create things. There's not a huge amount of like sit down and learn this aspect to it. So it was very much like immediately, like just let them explore, let them play, and kind of take a hands-off approach, which is, incredibly different to like the difference between the education system in Northern Ireland and in Scotland, even though they are in, the United Kingdom. Education is like a devolved power within the UK. So Scotland get to choose what the education system is like. England get to choose what their education system is like. Wales and Northern Ireland as well all get to choose what their education system is like. And in Scotland, it is mostly about discovery and play and learning things through, different means. Whereas in Northern Ireland, it's shut up and do your textbook. It's very different.
Well, I mean, yeah, country to country, like the vast differences, we already talked about that. But even like I know within like Canada, province to province, there's massive differences. I guess I've talked about in the past on this show, like state to state have differences. So yeah, it seems like a lot of different places. It's neighboring countries or neighboring states and provinces, but much different in terms of how they're approaching that. I know with like every time I've done kindergarten, I've done about the longest I've done is about a month, and it in terms of the lesson learned, like you're saying, like a lot of the collaborating with your classmates and the free play time is a big part of it. But then also, what they're learning a lot is it's mostly just letters, numbers, how to write, how to count, and those types of just the base level to once you get to first grade, arithmetic and reading and writing of grander scale, you can already have the baseline. So that's kind of what those 2 years in kindergarten are about. Just get the foundations of literacy and numeracy.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like it's clever play. It's not just like randomly sorted out, right? There are numbers and letters everywhere around for them to discover and talk about and things like that. So you want them to kind of like be inquisitive and kind of naturally bring these things up, which is nice. So that was my first experiences in there. My first like experience in like a more traditional classroom setting would have been like the next year when I went up and like taught for P2s for the primary two. So in Scotland you have 7 years in primary school. So you have 2 years in nursery, then 7 years in primary school. So I've done the primary two, and then I did a primary five class as well. And then primary seven, you kind of tend to work your way up as the placements go. And then in your final year, you get an option to kind of choose, would you rather teach in the bottom, the middle, or the upper of the school? And I chose upper because I felt like that kind of suited my teaching style the most then. So I had a really, really nice sort of final placement with a primary seven class, which was lovely, but got a huge shock. And so in Scotland, you have like a probation year basically. So I'm guaranteed a job when I graduate. So it doesn't matter where, like I applied for different councils. Thankfully, I got my first choice at Edinburgh City Council. And I came in and I remember speaking to people in the staff room in the school I got placed in, which is still the school I'm in now, actually, which is really nice. Managed to get a permanent job there, which is
Awesome.
great. So I got chatting to some people and they were like, oh, what year do you want to teach? So I was like, well, a lot of my experience is up the school, so maybe like a primary six or primary seven. I still remember like one of my colleagues just audibly laughed. And I was like, oh, this is not gonna be good. So I got told I'm teaching primary one, like right off the bat. I'm like, this is the last thing I want it to happen. But it's the best thing that could have happened to me because like my first year in, it was my first year teaching, it was their first year in school. So if I made a mistake, they didn't know. They didn't know. They're like, this is how it's meant to be. So it was perfect.
No, for sure. Again, we're always learning, as it's not just that the teacher learns every year as much about the students and from the students as reverse.
Yeah,
So that's always the
absolutely.
beauty of it.
Absolutely, yeah.
Speaking of beauty, we've got a beautiful, nice QR code that I guess we're 20 minutes in, so it doesn't feel too late yet. But yes, we've got a sponsorship here from Going for Two from Underdog Fantasy. And if you scan the QR code or use the promo code GF2, when signing up for Underdog on that initial deposit, they will match whatever that initial deposit is up to $100. So if you are new to Underdog, haven't joined yet, scan the QR code, use the promo code GF2, and when you enter, put up to $100, and then they will double whatever you put in. So if you max out and get 100, you've got $200 in your Underdog account to play pick'em contests, higher, lower on player stats, goal totals. You can see I clearly went away from football, like gridiron football, right, to either hockey or soccer and saying goals scored. Hockey playoffs are tonight. So, you know, if you want, you can sign up for Underdog right now, and you can, there's a game 6 of the Western Conference Final in the NHL and game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final in the NBA. You can play prop contest for already, or of course, we going for two Dynasty Hot Seat. Rewind, all the things we love is fantasy football. You can play best ball drafts on Underdog. That's probably the best part of it for us. And yes, we love fantasy. So again, if you haven't signed up for Underdog yet, do so using the promo code GF2 or scanning the QR code. But speaking of fantasy, Mags, have you ever used fantasy sports as a part of a lesson plan in any of your teaching jobs?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, if you win that like $3 million prize in Underdog after scanning that QR code, give me and Kyle a slice. Can we start with that as well? Like after that, like we have to get a little bit of that for sure. But in terms of like using fantasy, kinda, not really. I had an idea once upon a time, and then it kind of seemed like too much work, where I was going to kind of do like a fantasy, like because I was teaching Scotland, I was going to do like the Scottish Premier League version of fantasy football. But for the kids, like they had to do like some kind of like riddle or question or maths puzzle to figure out what each player actually scored points wise. And if they like didn't get it, then it would never unlock. Like they had to unlock it and go through. And obviously you would set it to different difficulty levels for each child. So they're not like just not getting anything right and then never going back to it. Right. So I kind of thought about trying to set something like that up, but so a lot of work, Kyle. I mean, does something like that exist, Stephen? I'm not sure.
Yeah, if they had already the format created and you could just, you know, just sign up. Yeah. And yeah, that would be great. I haven't seen anything like that. You come across the questions. I think you were thinking, like, the way you're explaining it, I'm picturing, like, player A scored 3 times as many goals as player B. Player B had the same amount of goals as this player. And then, they'll give you one thing in one place only. And then you got to kind of, figure out everything else from there and fill all the blanks.
Yeah, but I'm just like, I can't do all this. There's too many. There's too much. There's too many players. There's too many scores. So if something like that existed already, I might use that. Or if I could adapt it, that'd be great. And I haven't, you use like certain things like that, like your brain teasers where they have to kind of figure out numbers. But in terms of using actual like fantasy sports, not really, usually, because like in your class, most of them, and at least in the classes I've taught, most of them don't like follow any sport at all. So it's just like, okay, well, I'm not really going to force these kids to sit down and watch, you know, the latest Super Bowl and figure out how many like points a wide receiver is going to get whenever they've never seen a game of, you know, American football before in their life. I have kind of done things that you kind of see, especially in fantasy sports, like especially for people like us, maybe, versus like a super like newcomer into it. And I've done lessons. It was actually kind of based on the world economy at the time. But you could, okay, I suppose if you squint, you can see fantasy football where like some people have got lots of resources, but they don't actually know what they've got is good. And other teams have got like loads of information and they know how to like kind of play the other team a little bit, if that makes sense. So It was a lesson where there's like white paper and red paper, and there's like 10 different groups. And one of the groups gets like 5 bits of red paper and that's it, like nothing else. So that is meant to represent sort of, you know, these traditionally poorer countries who are like also somehow rich with natural resources. Mm-hmm. And then you get like other teams that are given like a list of instructions, how much red paper is worth, how much white paper is worth, scissors, like stencils, like everything that you might need. And it says on the paper at the top, the other teams don't know this, feel free to like exploit them. And then like going through it like that. So it's kind of like that whenever everyone's seen that when a new guy comes in. The first time anyone new comes into your league, what's the first thing you do? You send them a million trade offers, right? Because you're like, I need to see what this guy's all about, right?
Yeah, that's true. Again, I guess the best people taking over orphans, they'll be the ones also like they'll set out a bunch of trades if they want to just like, okay, I'm taking over this team. You can tell just how active they are if the new team taking over the orphan, the new manager just suddenly makes a bunch of trades. Okay, this player has been around. Like, they know what they're doing. But, yeah, yeah. The more timid, shy ones, you're right. Yeah, and that's unfortunately how the way the world works, economy-wise.
Absolutely.
So, yay.
Absolutely.
But because it's funny, because I hear a lot of fantasy football content, specifically Dynasty content, that talks about it like a stock market. So the idea of the business world and the fantasy world coinciding, it's a place that gets talked about a lot in our sphere, in our community.
Yeah, absolutely. I could see someone who maybe like is a secondary school teacher or high school teacher using it for like you said, like business studies or things like that. Like, you could definitely link that in 100%.
But yeah, I have noticed with this question, it seems like the people who teach secondary or high school will more often have an answer. I know Kevin Coleman, he did a fantasy league with his class, and it, you know, they're 15, 16 year olds, so they can kind of grasp that concept better and you know, talking trash to their teacher when, I beat you this week in the matchup. That seemed like that was a lot of fun, but
yeah, did he win? I need to know if he won that league, right? Surely he did.
I don't think he did. I guess that, that would have, go back and listen, I guess.
We'll figure it out.
Not just you, but everyone watching, go back. I'll have to go rewatch that episode and see what he said. Cause I'm pretty sure I asked him that. Of course, we all want to know that answer. I can't remember. I have a feeling he didn't. And that was kind of the beauty of it, is that the students kind of show that they were capable and they learned. Which is what I guess they're going to school for. But I have noticed that it seems like that people teaching primary elementary school don't have as direct an answer for that, just because it seems like a little logistically more difficult to kind of pull off.
Yeah, absolutely.
But one thing that we can all kind of enjoy is the fantasy community and the positive aspects that comes from that. And I'm sure there's lots of negatives with, you already mentioned like the amount of work that goes into teaching. Like, oh, I'd love to do this lesson plan, but man, that's a lot of effort to fill 30 minutes of time. What kind of experiences in the fantasy community have you used to draw parallels to your experiences teaching?
Yeah, it's funny. That's the first note I had, almost exactly that. Like, sometimes you put all the hard work in and it just, man, just does not work out for you. And it's just like, but I did everything right. You're like, I did, like, I had this in the perfect place. I had this station set up perfectly. I like kept this kid away from this kid. I like did everything really nicely. I like asked the kids before about what wanted to do. And then like you go back to the lesson the next day and they've forgotten everything. You're like, I thought it went so well. So sometimes you have that in fantasy as well, right? Where you're like, you make what looks like the perfect deal on paper and it just doesn't work. Like, you trade for Andrew Luck and he retires the next day, or so, like, you know, right? That happened to so many people, and it's just like you just get burned sometimes, and there's you just have to hold your hands up and go, hey, there's nothing I can do. And the opposite as well, right? Sometimes you're like, oh, I just, like, you know, pulled this lesson out of nowhere and the kids just absolutely loved it. Sometimes you're like, just getting a third round pick to hit, or like a throwing guy ends up, you know, absolutely smashing it. Or it's like, oh, hey, I've had Cordarrelle Patterson on my roster for 5 years. Now he's finally doing something. Yeah, who would have thought it, right? So things like that kind of crop up a lot, right? Because it is hard. Like, it's almost like you want to treat like fantasy players, like as if like they're not, you want to distance yourself from the person as much as possible almost, because as soon as, like we talked about at the start, as soon as you start like leaning into your, like, your homerisms and like leaning into biases and things like that, that's maybe going to damage your fantasy team, because you're not looking at it, you know, just purely from like a numbers point of view. That's about the worst thing you could do in teaching, right? Like, distance yourself from the person, like look at them just as like a grade or like a number on a paper. So they're almost like the opposite in a lot of ways as well.
That's a good point. Yeah, I don't think anyone's mentioned that before, that it is best to kind of look at fantasy objectively, as you know, that you're looking at the statistics they're providing, and because that's the outcome you want is fantasy points. But when it comes to education, you know, the student, the grade they get isn't the purpose of a school year. It's to instruct them and teach them and help them grow. So you're right that it does kind of have opposite purposes in a sense.
Yeah, and we don't really have that. That's a thing I think maybe will differ between, you know, especially schools in England and Scotland and Northern Ireland and Scotland. there isn't really a huge emphasis, at least in primary school, to have like any kind of severely huge national testing. They get sort of tested in primary one and primary four and primary seven. It's not a big deal. It's like a 30 minute little thing. It's not really like a pressurized sit down and do your paper. It's all on iPads. It's all kind of presented quite nicely. It's very like unintimidating. Whereas I think in some parts of the United States anyway, it's like sit down, here's your pencil, paper, like time starts now, like a much more pressured environment, where there seems to be in Scotland a lot less sort of focus on performing well in tests. And the big focus at the minute is thing called like developing like skills for life, and like every lesson will start with me saying, well, so what, like at the end of it, so what are we learning about? And it's like, well, so what, like what does it actually mean, how are you going to use that? And moving away from like, if they're writing an essay, it's like, what is your learning intention? The learning intention isn't I'm learning to write an essay. That's what you're like doing, like you're not learning that. It's like, well, what are you actually learning? So like, oh well, I guess I'm learning to like put my like I'm learning to like link creative writing techniques together. It's like, yes, that's what you're actually learning to do. What you're doing is writing an essay. What you're learning about is linking your vocabulary, your connecting, your openers, your punctuation, linking them all together. And then it's the why at the end. So why? How is that going to help you? What are you going to do when you grow up that's actually going to help you? And then you get like jobs from A to B to C, like all over. So that's a real focus at the minute.
Yeah. Whereas, yeah, I think with the, it's funny that you mentioned the standardized testing, although it doesn't seem too intense, but primary one, four, and seven, you said?
Yeah.
In Canada, it's primary three and primary six. And then another big standardized testing. There's a math one in grade nine in high school, and then language one in grade 10. So whether you're in English or French school, that might be an English test or a French test.
Yep.
But yeah, those primary three and primary six standardized tests, that they put a lot of emphasis on it in terms of it'll usually take a whole week. It'll be like you're not doing it all every day all week, and I think that's the part of it. Okay, you're gonna have like an hour and a half block to do part of this test, and then you'll get a couple hour break, and then come back and do the next hour block, and then like it'll reading, writing, comprehension, and then some numeracy stuff as well, and that's it, like it's a kind of a big deal, even though as teachers we as teachers don't consider it a big deal, like whether the student does well in that or not. It's more the ministry wanting to know that teachers are doing things properly and actually teaching and seeing where like the average levels are throughout the province. At least that's how it is in Ontario. And again, even to other provinces probably do that differently.
Yeah. It's a hard balance to strike as well, right? Because you've got, obviously you don't want to put too much pressure on them with these exams, but at the end of the day, whenever they're doing like on their last year of school, they're going to have to do exams, like last year, secondary school. Mm-hmm. When they're at university, they're going to have to do tests. So it's where do you start telling them that these things are important? Like, it's hard to kind of like get that. I mean, hopefully they kind of get it naturally as the more tests they do, they kind of figure out maybe, okay, I need to do this, or like the talking about the jobs and things like that throughout might kind of go like, okay, well, I need to do this for that. And then some of them might be like, well, I don't need that to do this job, so I'm going to worry about it too much. But it's a hard, I've always found it a hard line to find, like, when do you like tell them, no, this is actually a big deal, this is where you should be really focusing. And like, yeah, it's a tricky line to find, I think.
Yeah, balance to tell, let them know it's important, but it's also not all life encompassing, like your entire future depends just on the tests.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so but tricky balance. I think fantasy football has aspects of balance to it, in that how much are we balancing past production versus future production? If we're talking from a dynasty or even in redraft, okay, this player's done well, but what are we projecting them going forward? And how much balance are you putting on your projections for a season versus all the data that we've seen through that player's career up to this point?
Yeah, like draft classes as well, right? Like, do I want this draft class? Do I want to like push it down the line? Like, even thinking about little subtle things like, like, okay, I'm getting a first round pick off a guy that's a contender. Like, I probably don't actually want their 24 first because they're going to be good. It's like, give me your 25 or 26 first instead. Like, trying to like balance it out, like thinking, well, in this year, maybe that'll be worth more. Like, yeah, you're like, oh, do I want the more recent pick? Because then I have it sooner. Or like, yeah, there's a lot of balancing to do for sure.
Because if I saw a tea that was a heavy contender right now, they're probably selling their first pretty cheaply now. Can that first maybe get me something better in season? So I'll trade the player for that future first now, even if that team looks really good. But I won't let it get to the 24 draft class. I'm going to sell that 24 first before it gets the pick and before people know that that isn't, in fact, officially a 110, 111, or if that other, I would hope not 112, because I would hope I would win, but
111. Yeah, give them that.
Yeah. We'll say that. We'll think positively. And I think, positive influences are important for all of us. So, Mags, who have been the biggest influences in your life?
Yeah, a couple of different ones, like plenty of like teachers growing up that I had that were really, really good. Weirdly enough, less so in primary school, like because I grew up in that Northern Irish education system we talked about. It was very much shut up and do your maths, like nothing really, like nothing too exciting, like all very much textbook heavy. Sit down, do that, wait for the bell to go, and it was like okay. In high school, like there were some really, really good teachers that helped me sort of think, oh, I could do this job. I quite like that. And this is the kind of teaching style that I would take going forward. So there are like four or five of them, which I really liked. And there are obviously some ones along the way that I'm like, I'm not going to be like that person. I'm not going to make those mistakes. I'm not going to do that. So you can have like influences. You can have like reverse influences, right? Especially with teaching. I think you're like, I'm not going to do it that way. I'm not going to go down that road. So I've had quite a few of those, as I'm sure you've had as well, going down the line. And my friends, right, they're a bunch of dicks, right? Mostly, which is like the best friends to have, really, because like we all live together in university. See, if you did anything that wasn't like perfect, you would just hear about it forever. So it was a weirdly good influence, because I was like, right, no, I've got to do whatever it is I'm doing, I better do it right, because I'm just going to hear. Like, we used to all cook for each other. So I love cooking. I'm quite a good cook now. But the reason I am is because you just got so much abuse if you serve. I still hear about fried rice I made 12 years ago. I still get a hard time for it.
The joke hasn't been too fried up to this point.
No, they're only getting started. So like they've been a good influence, and we kind of give each other a hard time, but it makes us all stronger in the end. And like family, obviously, as well. Like I grew up, I know this is a question for later, like what might people not know about me? I grew up on a farm in Northern Ireland, like a tiny little village. So obviously seeing like all my family members just kind of grinding and like working hard every day. And like my dad is in his 70s and still working strong. Like there's he's not going to stop. It's just what the farming life is like.
I've heard that a lot. Farm boy strong, like especially here, like in America, when football players usually, I hear that a lot. Oh, he's a farm boy strong. This defensive lineman, he can just he'll just eat those O linemen because he's a farmer. So
it's different kind of strength. Yeah,
yeah, for sure. I know my dad grew up on a farm in Portugal, so he's got cool. There. I didn't grow up on a farm in Canada, so I don't have that strength. My grandparents, my dad, and his sisters, they all immigrated in the late 60s. So it's funny when you mentioned Ronaldo and final. It's like, wait, Cristiano Ronaldo made it to a final. That would be amazing. Portugal gets to a World Cup final. I'd love that so much.
Yeah, not quite. He won the Euros, though.
That was incredible. Take that, France.
Yeah,
in France too. Absolutely. That was fun.
Yes.
Sorry that they had to beat Wales in the semi, though.
I was kind of looking out for Wales a little bit, but I've not got too much affinities to Wales. If we're talking rugby, I kind of want Wales to lose to almost everybody, apart from England. Like
I guess it depends. I guess with the World Cup and with soccer, there's so many countries that the Scotland, England, Ireland, Northern Ireland, Wales. Well, we'll stay together when we're not playing against each other. We'll cheer. Yeah. But I guess with rugby, there's not as many countries playing, so it's the same 7-8 countries you're facing anyway. So.
Yeah, there's like 10 countries that are good at rugby. Rugby's so underrated, but rugby is me. I love me some rugby. Like it's a really underrated sport. I think it should be a bit more international, actually. But the sevens in the Olympics, that might help out. Do you get the same with like Canadians, as Canadians, if like America are playing, you're like, I hope those guys lose, or are you a bit more friendly?
Oh yeah, no. Usually, yeah. I usually take it of I like seeing the States lose.
Yeah,
and that's not even. I don't even know if that's close. It's just I love rooting for the underdog. So like the big bully, I always want to see them lose. Sorry, States. Yeah. So I usually don't root for England, but I'll be much more inclined to see a Wales or a Scotland win like that. Okay, that's cool, but the. I guess for Canada, the overlord rulers, there's three. It's France, England, and the States. And I think anytime I see any of those three countries lose, I'm usually pretty happy.
Yes, absolutely. Look, Canada's coming on in the soccer world, right? You got a couple of good players.
Yeah, yeah. Alphonso Davies is certainly good. And I mean, from a women's perspective, the women have been far ahead of the men for a long time. They've medaled at the last three Olympics and actually won the gold at the last Olympic, finally got over that hump. They've usually done well at the World Cups, although they've traditionally done better at the Olympics than they have the World Cups.
Yeah, but, yeah.
I know, unlike say men's soccer, where that like there's not much of a difference. Like usually it's the under 23s, right, who play at the Olympics for the men.
And usually, yeah,
you usually get three overage players I think are allowed to play, but for the women's, it's always the same team. It's the senior level team playing both. So World Cup and Olympics are kind of viewed the same importance for women's soccer as opposed to men's soccer, where World Cup is far more important than the Olympics.
And why do you think, like, in terms of like NFL, why do you think like there's like Canada's obviously got a huge population, like, but why do you think there's only a couple of guys, and there's like Chase Claypool and like Chuba Hubbard and like not too many other like Canadian guys in there? Is it because they all flock to hockey, or?
Yeah, I think I wonder if that's the hockey influence growing up is there. And I think you're certainly talking the skill positions, because I think like the offensive linemen, defensive linemen, those guys, if they want to be athletes, there's, I mean, unless you could maybe be agile enough to be in rugby, you're probably, there's only a few sports where you could actually compete and excel at.
Yeah.
I think it's gotten better, because right now I think Canada's on like a 13-year stretch where at least one Canadian player has been drafted every year.
Okay.
Which wasn't always the case way back when. And they actually, it's funny, I think I was wearing this same shirt when it happened. We were doing a Going for Two live stream during the draft, and this is the first year where five Canadians were drafted in the same draft.
Wow. We've
had four in a couple instances, and including that Chase Claypool, Chuba Hubbard year, they were drafted. Yeah. Who else was that year? Javon something from the Dolphins, a safety. And then Benjamin Saint-Just, quarterback from Javon Holland. I always forget his name, because he's Canadian. Yeah. He's not from Netherlands. He's not from Holland. Those guys were... So 4-1 class was the previous record. And then Chase Brown being drafted this year was the first Canadian taken. So Chase Brown was technically the record breaker.
Yeah. Good on him. Good for Chase. Yeah. And I wonder if that's going to end up looking more like the NBA, right? Where you get this kind of wave of other people eventually coming in.
Yeah. There was a couple years in a row where Canada had the first overall pick a few years in a row, Wiggins and then Barrett. And then I think there was another one in there where there was another top five pick the year after, the year before. So yeah, it's, I think, you know, just places in Canada have invested more into those athletics and people want to access it. And I think just to know that it's not just hockey as well. Like there's a lot of, you know, the NHL still, over half the players in the NHL are still Canadian. So it probably is like the first inclination to do that. But I think all these other sports growing, it's showing the possibilities for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Back to growing the games globally, I think is a big part of it. Yeah, the other thing too with Canada is we've got our own Gridiron Football League, the Canadian Football League. So to a certain extent, that will draw certain players, especially. I think, you know, the dream is to play in the NFL. But for like if there's guys, I think that at a certain point in their career, they'd rather just play as opposed to, you can go to the NFL. You can maybe make a practice squad. You can maybe be a backup, occasionally get snaps, or you could go to the CFL and just play every snap. I think a couple guys make those choices too.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll see. I know there's a quarterback for Deep Dynasty Stashes, Nathan Rourke, who just totally tore up the CFL last year. He's signed with the Jaguars. So I think entry-level contracts that aren't rookies, I think, are 2 years. So he's going to be Trevor Lawrence's potential as backup for 2 years. We'll see. But once those 2 years are done, like I think he's got enough arm talent, enough pocket mobility, enough kind of big game potential that he could become a starter someday. So if you want like a really late stash in Dynasty drafts, I know I've already picked him up in a couple leagues, just kind of, these rosters are huge enough. I can afford to ride on a taxi squad or, you know, sometimes 35-man rosters. Like, there's no one on the waiver wire. I may as well pick up Nathan Rourke. But, yeah, those types of leagues, go grab Rourke. Hold on to him for a couple of years and see what happens when he leaves the Jags, is he going to chase to be a starter somewhere? So, yeah.
Love it. Yeah, that'll be a great story, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so, and I want to have him on all my teams when he does hit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he's a Canadian, actually. So to see any Canadian quarterbacks aren't really a thing in the CFL. Like, almost every quarterback's American. We're even starting to see that now. Yeah. Of Edmonton's got a guy, Trey Ford. Obviously, BC had Nathan Rourke last year, who just probably would have won the MVP if he didn't get hurt. He only played 10 games, but he threw in those 10 games, he threw something like I think almost 30 touchdown passes. Like, it was pretty ridiculous. Wow. Like, yeah. He still finished, you know, 10 games to 18 games. He still finished second in the league in touchdown passes, because he and Kolaris were just so far ahead of everyone else. But anyway, that's enough CFL talk. I'm wearing the Canada shirt, right? So I'm in the mood to talk CFL. But
absolutely.
So, okay, you grew up on a farm. So that's one thing I guess no one in the fantasy community knew about you.
Yeah.
But is there anything else you'd like to share? Or do we move on to the fantasy specific questions?
I suppose grew up on a farm. I like playing chess. How about that? I'm a big chess guy. That's something I don't really talk about. So I coach chess in my school at some lunchtimes and after schools.
I've actually noticed that, like, chess programs at, like, in the school board I work for, it's been the last 2-3 years, they've just been doing a lot of them, organizing tournaments so the kids can kind of come together from different schools. And yeah, I think it's a great game to play, teaching a ton of lessons. Yeah. Thinking ahead, planning, and there's all sorts of ingrained lessons in chess. So it's a good game.
I love it.
But of course, I think the game we love the most is fantasy football. So
that's definitely chess. You know my friend Murph, who you might know from the UK. He once described redraft versus dynasty, and he's like, redraft's playing checkers and dynasty's playing chess. I always thought that was a great quote.
Murph's a 5-yard rush, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I think, yeah, I'm familiar with him. I guess that leads into, what's your favorite format? So is it checkers, is it chess, or is there something completely different?
So it's definitely dynasty. That's my jam. Like, that dynasty. I'm in a few redraft leagues, but not too many at all. Mostly just with friends. I can't decide if I like tight end premium or not. I'm leaning at the moment towards no. Because I'm kind of like, come on, if you're good enough, you're good enough. Like, just get one of these good tight ends. Like, so I can understand tight end premium in a couple of tight end premium leagues, but I think my favorite is Superflex with no tight end premium. And that's what I do in my show. That's every draft we do is Superflex with no premium. But I'm on the fence a little bit. What do you prefer the premium, Kyle?
I'm almost a madman, and I prefer not alternating the scoring settings. The scoring settings are what they are, regardless of position. Mm. So I kind of am opposed to it just, okay, we're raising it just for tight ends, right? Like, I know quarterback scoring is different because passing yards are different than rushing yards, but
yeah.
Like, and I've heard of that. Like, you might, okay, nerf quarterback rushing yards. You might make that the same value as passing yards so that rushing quarterbacks aren't the same. But for the most part, I like just, these are the scoring settings. Leave the scoring settings. If you want to change position scarcity, just add a second mandatory tight end. I go to that extreme, like, play with two tight ends, and then you've created position scarcity at the very top, which, I mean, that already exists, but then certainly at the bottom end, people want to get those tight ends that are good enough to start and roster.
Yeah. I've heard that before on a point. I can't remember who it was, but they were talking about, like, how do you get these players that matter? And it was like, there's only 12 quarterback ones, there's only 12 running back ones, there's only 12 wide receiver ones, and there's only 2 tight end ones. It's like,
oftentimes tight end 7 doesn't matter relative to tight end 20. But if you create a 2 tight end league, suddenly all those tight end 7 through 24, the tight end
exactly.
1 and 2, you kind of need those, and then that will be kind of a tier break between them and the really bad ones.
Yeah, I like that a lot, yeah. Yeah, I think I prefer that over the premium. Yeah, definitely.
So aside from the scoring settings, is there one rule that you feel like you have to have in every fantasy league?
Yeah, I'm passionate about this one. If you post a picture of a trade calculator, you're banned. Get out. Like, that's not allowed, because what we all know, that if you post me a picture of a trade calculator, I can go out and find another calculator and show you that your deal is wrong. So We just sending like pictures to each other all day. Now what are we doing? Like, no, I hate it.
May as well be Snapchat instead of fantasy.
Exactly. Yeah. So
I think that's what that is. InstaChat, Snapgram. I get them all confused. I'm not hip.
Oh, there's so much now. Yeah. Snapchat's the picture one. The Instagram's pictures as well. I'm not a big social media guy.
We can share pictures on Twitter. Honestly, there's pictures everywhere.
Exactly. Like it's. So yeah, that's one. I'm like, no, I don't care about your trail calculator. This is what I think. Like, what do you think? Don't like get like ChatGPT to get your value for you or whatever, right? Do it yourself. Like, I want to know what you think.
I would say is if someone gives me a trade calculator pick, okay, I know what trade calculator you're using. I'm going to use that information to make a really lopsided trade that looks good on the calculator. So you'll accept it. I'll kind of store that, maybe not do it right away to make it as obvious, but I'll come back a week later to that person. Okay. Like let's see if you'll fall for this one. Apparently if advanced fantasy calculator says it works.
Yeah, exactly.
So in a sense, it's information you can use. As much as it's annoying, it is information you can use to take advantage of your league mate.
Yeah, that's definitely true. But yeah, that's almost one I'm just like, ugh, I hate whenever you get a calculator like screenshot post that. I'm like I don't commission any leagues because I'm too lazy. But I'll be an automatic ban like in my leagues.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, don't send Mags any trade calculator screenshots, folks.
Don't do it. Don't do it. He'll be
on his hot seat and be really hot mad.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Like it'll be, you know, one of the worst thing I've ever seen somebody do for like a trade. They sent him a trade calculator and the guy was like, so mad. He's one of my friends. He was like, oh, cool. Like send the deal through. And the guy sent it through and he declined it. And he was like, oh, sorry, man. I pressed the wrong button. You send it through again. He just declined it again. He's like, oh no, I pressed the right one.
Let me just get this right. Like the guy that sent the picture, he was the one kept sending the offer, and your buddy was just messing with him just to.
Yeah, so he said the screenshot of the trail calculator, and my mate was like, "Yeah, man, that sounds great. Like, send the offer through."
Okay, and then he hit, and messing with him, and then later, don't ever do
that. And he's like, "Yeah, no, I hit the right button. Don't send me trail calculator picture." That's a bit harsh, but it's quite funny.
To be fair, I guess that person will know, okay, for that specific manager, I'm not going to send them trade. I'll send it to the trade calculator shots to everyone else. That was too painful of experience. I'll definitely remember that. Like that's what you're trying to make it so like it's significant for them. Remember to never send me this because I'll mess with you harder next time.
I don't advise burning bridges in fantasy. Like trying, I would do it a nicer way, but I was still quite funny.
Yeah, be subtle. A little subtlety.
Yeah.
So, history of your favorite player. So, Mags, who are your all-time QB1, RB1, wide receiver 1, and tight end 1 in fantasy?
This is a cool question. So for the quarterback one, I was like, I can't be a homer and like pick one of my favorite. I'm actually going to go maybe for like in terms of how much of a difference this guy kind of made as to how people thought about quarterbacks. I think Michael Vick is a really good answer here because we see now everyone talks about the Konami code quarterbacks. And Michael Vick, well, I suppose maybe Steve Young, if you really want to go back. Michael Vick was like the first like real like example of like that Konami code quarterback in fantasy. And if you had Michael Vick in your team, you were probably winning your league, even though quarterback back then wasn't even as highly valued as it is now with Superflex. So I'm going to go Michael Vick just because of the difference he made to the game of fantasy. And people now like Justin Fields who can't even throw the ball are like dynasty assets.
Yeah. There you go. Rushing yards are king. We talked about the scoring settings. If you're not going to, you know, if rushing yards are going to be the same value for everyone, quarterback and running backs, those quarterbacks do kind of create a cheat code, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely.
And speaking of running backs, who's your all-time RB1?
Yeah, this is a guy I never actually had on any of my teams at all, but I kind of just did a wee bit of research and just looking at it, I think Marshall Faulk has to be, like, he's got 3 of the top 10 like running back seasons ever in fantasy football history. So I was like, well, I can't not pick that guy. I think LT's at the top for the biggest season ever and Christian McCaffrey's up there. But having, you know, 1/3 or, you know, almost a third, if we're talking the real teacher talk here, almost a third of like the top 10 finishes of all time in running back points scored. If he's getting 3 of them, I'm going to put him as number 1.
So a third is A divided by 3 and 1/3 is 1 divided by 3. I gotcha. Say a third.
Yeah.
How do you divide by a letter? Yes. I think with Faulk, it's almost similar to Michael Vick in that the idea of the pass catching running back, because I believe he's one of only, like McCaffrey, the thousand rushing yards, thousand receiving yards. I think Roger Craig's the only other running back to do that. So, but Falk would also be incredible from a touchdown scorer and just like,
just beast overall. Like, yeah, and he was the one that stood out when I looked at the stats.
Awesome. All right. All time wide receiver one.
I don't know if this is a controversial one. I'm going to go Antonio Brown for this. Again, mainly if you look at, like, he had a 6-year span where he was wide receiver 5 once, he was wide receiver 2 twice, and then wide receiver 1 3 years on the bounce, which is just, you know, 6 years in a dynasty team is absolutely huge. And being that wide receiver 1 3 years in a row, even for like a redraft team, that is absolutely massive. So I think Antonio Brown is a guy I'm going to say is the all-time wide receiver one.
Yeah, if you rostered Antonio Brown between 2014 and 2016, it was such a huge boost. I think, you know, Jerry Rice has been consecutive wide receiver one back-to-back years, and I think that's it. We've seen go from Jerry Rice to now we've seen Antonio Brown do it, and maybe we'll see Justin Jefferson do it. Odds are he probably won't be, though, I'll still draft Justin Jefferson probably as the wide receiver one, both in Dynasty and redraft, but just knowing that the odds are against him repeating as wide receiver one again.
Yeah, never mind doing it. Yeah, 3 years in a row. That's incredible.
Now, I was just looking today at Justin Jefferson's stats. I was running my touchdown projections for the Vikings, and you know, 1,400 receiving yards is his floor so far. So Justin Jefferson is also kind of a different beast of an animal. 4,800 receiving yards through 3 years. So he might have that Antonio Brown in him that he could do it, because I think it takes the great route running. Obviously, you have to be tied to a quarterback that can give you that production, and Jefferson's got that with Cousins and the opportunity. Probably the strongest case we've had for a wide receiver one to repeat since Antonio Brown.
Yeah, agreed.
And tight end one.
Oh, this is easy. I didn't even need to research this. This is Travis Kelce with a bullet. Yeah. Like,
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
Kansas City Chief fan. But also, like, do you know what the difference was between Travis Kelce and the tight end two last year?
It was like 8 points per game or something. Maybe
more. It was the same amount of points Christian Kirk scored all season.
that's like 130 targets worth for Christian Kirk. So that's a lot of points.
And he had a really good season. Like, that is the difference maker that Travis Kelce is. He had that 1 year when Mark Andrews, I think, was tight end one. But apart from that, it's just been year after year after year after year of Travis Kelce just being that huge difference maker in your team. And yeah, if you're in a tight end premium league, forget about it. Like, he's up there scoring as many points as the quarterbacks by the end of the year.
Well, if start two tight end premium, even with Superflex from a redraft perspective, he's probably the 101.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Because like, he's such a difference maker there. If you have to start two tight ends with a premium, yeah, I think it's Kelce by quite a distance as well, actually.
So that'd be interesting, like, because I've seen that in dynasty leagues, but from a redraft perspective, you really want to create quarterback scarcity, make it super flex, add two tight ends and tight end premium, get tight end scarcity, and suddenly that first round would be pretty wild.
Has anyone said anyone else apart from Kelce?
Some people have said, like, some of their favorites. Like, I don't, like, in this, the reason I ask it, who is your all-time, is that everyone can kind of answer it in different ways. Like, we've had Kelce and Gronk seem to be the two most popular answers, but I believe I've had people mention Antonio Gates. Won me a bunch of fantasy championships in the mid-2000s. Mm-hmm. I'd probably answer it Mark Andrews, just because Andrews is actually the player I've won the most fantasy championships with.
Yeah, so nice.
Which is why I love this show, because it's how each guest answers is also unique to each guest.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
But of course, the favorite part of the show, the high five section. Yeah. All right. Yes. Someone else did it. I usually do that and I look weird doing it on my own. Thank you.
I've been looking forward to it. Yeah.
But so top five from five different categories. I'm still excited about this. I guess less excited when you're not a musician now, but who are your top five favorite artists and bands?
Trying to give I've got quite a, what's the word I'm looking for? Eclectic, like an eclectic kind of musical background. But if I had like five kind of go-tos, I'm starting off with Kendrick Lamar, my favorite rapper, who I seen live in Newcastle this year. It was an absolute treat. One of the best gigs I've ever been to in my life. I've got an Irish band called the Coronas, who I've seen live lots of times. First time I seen them live was at a festival in Ireland called Oxygen, and the stage was quite cool. So you had to, like, the dance floor powered the instruments through, like, kinetic energy. So you had to, like, jump up and down, like, on the dance floor. Otherwise, their instruments wouldn't work. So this was, like, 15 years ago we seen them, and they're still going today. So I still, every time they're around, I'll go see them and, like, support them and keep them going. So the Coronas, they make quite good music.
Because I already forgot the band name. I was so intrigued. Oh, this Oxygen Festival is kinetic music. Yeah. I kind of forgot the band name, the Coronas. Okay,
yeah, cool. The Coronas. Yeah, they make some nice music. The sort of British sort of 90s kind of Brit pop band Blur are one of my all-time favorites. Just, you know, growing up as a kid, they were always like, it was always like Blur or Oasis. Like, bro,
I was going to say, you said British Britpop in the 90s. He's going to go one of two ways. So you're a Blur guy. Okay.
I'm not an Oasis hater or anything. I'm just a Blur guy. And, you know, obviously as a branch of that, like, love the Gorillaz as well. Damien Albarn, the lead singer of the Gorillaz, also, as well as Blur. And he's got some nice solo stuff, but I don't like it as much. But Blur are one of my favorite bands for sure. Another rapper I quite like is a guy called Joyner Lucas. His last album out is like a real called Evolution. Real fun listen to, just to sit down from start to finish, which I always really like. I'm an album guy. Like, I like listening to albums. I've got, the way I listen to music, right? I don't know if this is going to make sense, Kyle, but I'm going to give it a go. So I've got a gigantic playlist on my iPhone called Albums to Listen To. And when I just start at the top and I'll play it, and when I'm finished playing it, if I've got any other playlists I want to put it into, like my rock playlist or like my barbecue playlist or like whatever other playlist I've got, I'll put it into that and then I'll just delete it off the albums to listen to, and I'll move down and I'll like listen to others. And any songs or like any music recommendations I get, I just drag it into the albums to listen to and it goes straight to the bottom. And then I'll eventually get to it like a year later. But that's the way I listen to music, which is a good system, because things come up and I'm like, oh yeah, like this guy told me about them like ages ago. So that's my system. Does that sound weird? Does that make any sense?
Well, I mean, I love weird, so I'll say yes is a positive. I do love listening to complete albums as well. So I get that idea of wanting. I just got a new vehicle, but my old car had a CD player in it. So like my wife and I road trips, it's just CD, 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 CD. So now it's
nice.
I got to figure out, I think portable CD players exist. I'm kind of like that as well in the album oriented nature.
Yeah. And one more I've got on here is, you know, all the works of Chris Cornell, the absolute, you know, legend, rest in peace, Chris Cornell. Yeah. Love his work from Soundgarden, Audioslave, and his original work as well, I think, is absolutely amazing. So Chris Cornell in my top five too.
Yeah, that all three of those projects, we'll say, deserve kind of equal merit. I love absolutely both bands, and I love Chris Cornell as a solo artist too. So it's interesting because I kind of half expected a specific band to be in your top five, just with, you know, the hot seat. Certainly, especially the outro, it really sounds like a Nirvana song. So it's funny that you went with Cornell instead of the other grunge band Nirvana. I was wondering there, but that's cool.
It does sound Nirvana-esque actually as well when I first got it. It's some royalty-free music. I can't remember the
part. Well, it's not a Nirvana song. It's the, you've got the chorus effect on the guitar, just kind of the way it's,
Nirvana, not quite in the top. They make the top 10 though, I'd say.
Yeah. All right. So more of a Soundgarden guy. All right. Yeah, I do love Soundgarden too.
Yeah.
I'm sure, you know, you being from Northern Ireland, I'm sure if everyone went Irish music, U2 probably comes up first. I know I love the band Ash. So to hear the Coronas as that Irish band, that's a unique answer too.
Yeah, they're just I've met them loads of times. They're just nice.
Awesome.
Like nice people. Very, very chilled out. Like nothing like you're going to be like, whoa, that's the best thing I've ever heard. It's all very chilled, very relaxed. Good to stick on at a barbecue or whatever. Just very, very chilled.
Awesome. All right. So listen to all those bands if you want, folks, and put them on your playlist that you'll listen to a year from now.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So next is top five books.
Yeah. So I thought I'd mention one because obviously we're talking about teaching here. Two books that I read with my class this year that are really good are, there's a book called The Boy at the Back of the Class, which is a really good novel to read to your class. It's about pupil starting a new school, and like the pupil is from an Indian family moving into a school that is predominantly sort of white, and sort of feels like he stands out in the class, and like just the story behind that, and like the kind of subtle underlying sort of racism that might exist, and how to tackle it and how to confront it and deal with all these sort of bigger issues in society, but does it in like a child friendly way, and has lots of resources with it to discuss with the class. So they find it really valuable, and it's like written really well. It's funny, it's exciting. The chapters have cliffhangers on them, so they just want you to read more and more of it. So yeah, that's quite good. And that's obviously an elementary school teacher thing, right? Having a class novel, you don't really do that, I don't think, with secondary school as much. The other one was,
I think English class, you might, English and French.
True.
Well, or French class, yeah. Right? But those would be the only two. But yeah, it's interesting that before you get to the next one, that we talked already about biases in fantasy football, and how I'm sure that book probably approaches bias in a certain way as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just, yeah, it's all written, you know, really, really nicely. And the kids loved it. And same with the other one, which has been turned into quite a famous movie. Now, the book's really famous as well. It's the book Wonder, which is like about the boy with the sort of facial, I can't remember the exact word for it, for the condition that he has, but his face is kind of disfigured mostly. So he's got like no cleft palate. He's got like a lot of things going on. He's had multiple surgeries on his face, and does all about how he wants to like hide himself away and slowly like comes out of a shell. And you meet other characters in the book, and the characters that you thought weren't nice, you find out they've got things going on. And it's all about like, you know, not judging a book by its cover, all inside this like book itself. So really, really good, really, really good read for the class. And the movie's all right as well. Actually, the movie's not bad. It's got Owen Wilson in it, so it's a plus.
All right, Owen Wilson, there we go. Now it's a good time.
Absolutely. And then just three that I kind of read myself. I'm currently almost finished through the Andrzej Sapkowski series of books, The Witcher novels, that people might know them by. So The Witcher, the Netflix TV show that they butchered and ruined, which is of great pain to me. I'm reading through those. I'm on the final one at the minute. I'm about two chapters out, so don't put anything in the comments, please. So I need to finish that off. Hopefully this week, actually, I'll get that polished off. It'd be good.
Isn't there also a video game series?
The video game is awesome as well. That's why I started to read the books, because I loved the video game. So I thought I'd just buy all the books, and I've just been working my way through them. There's a series of books called Goes from Leviathan Wakes to Leviathan Falls. It's kind of like a huge sort of sci-fi kind of saga, all about like whenever humans leave Earth, and some of them are settled on Mars, and some of them are settled on like asteroid belts in between. And just like it has like subtle things about discrimination, and like the humans feeling superior to the people that live on the asteroid belt and the people that live on Mars, and like how it kind of all falls out, and like how people get like different. It's very political, but it's also very social. It's very, very, very clever, although it is a slog. There are like, I think, 8 books, and each of them are 600 odd pages, so a bit of a slog, but well worth it. Really good. And the last one I have is a bit of a curveball. It is a book technically, but it is the run that Jonathan Hickman had on Marvel Comics Avengers and New Avengers. It is one of the best like stories I've ever come across. Didn't actually read it though. There's a guy on YouTube reads it all for you. I just listen to him. But it's a 13-hour video, so it took me a while.
That's several movies, but yeah. Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's brought up graphic novels in the list specific. Or maybe, yeah. I think actually Josh Nelson brought up a graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was, he was talking about Green Lantern, and I think he referenced a novel I had, so I pulled it up. But yeah. Awesome.
Cool.
Yeah. Thanks for throwing us the curveball, even though we don't love baseball, but... Well, some people do. And Jamie's in the chat now joining us. He said, I'm on early today, earlier than expected too. So it's entirely my fault, Jamie, so don't feel bad. I originally scheduled it for 2 p.m. Eastern, not realizing that Mags and I kind of got lost in translation of the time zone changes. And I why do we have daylight savings time? North America, come on, get with it. But let's confuse everyone as much. So yeah, we started at 1:30 Eastern instead. So my bad, Jamie. But like, I guess the good news is, like you can do with every show on the Going for Two Live network, if you know you can't catch it all live or entirely live, just go back and rewatch in the archives. I know Jamie, like I haven't watched the fantasy cheat sheet with you guys a couple of times. So yeah, I usually go back and rewatch it the day after. So yeah, he'll forgive me this time. Thanks. Thank you, Jamie. Your forgiveness is important to me.
Thank you, Jamie.
But yeah, I guess next is top five TV series.
Yeah, this is so hard. Like, this is a real tough one. So I was like, okay, I'm kind of, the first one I put on the list, the very first one I put on is like, my favorite show just to put on and throw on and have it on is It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I just love that show. I could watch it like all day, just happily. Like, I've seen it all so many times. It's just very easy to watch. And just the humor is so silly and so like, it gets sort of clever towards the end with it as well. Like, they kind of do a couple of like deeper meaning episodes that you have to maybe like think about what they're doing to get it. But yeah, it's one for me that's super easy to watch. And I put in two other comedies there. There's a UK comedy called, now this sounds dirty, but it's not, I promise. It's a show called Peep Show. It's about a comedy, and it's shot quite uniquely. It's all shot like through the eyes of two people, but you only ever see them like through the other person's eyes. So it's all like first person like perspective, and it's just two British guys. Like, one is like buttoned up, uptight, like loves history and like talking about finance, and the other one is this kind of useless stoner degenerate, but they both live together and they've been best friends forever. It's brilliant. Like, it really is. Like, if you like kind of British humor and British comedy, it's like at the apex of that for me, above anything else. I don't know if you've heard of it even. I don't even know how
I feel like
British
I've heard the name
is.
Before. I know Canada, we kind of will sometimes get some of that British influence. I've never watched it, but what intrigues me is like the way it's shot, say point of view between the two characters. Like, I love stuff like that in terms of a new approach to cinematography. Like, what is the camera operator? What is the director? How do they put their thumbprint on the episode specifically? So that intrigues me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's brilliant. I'm currently watching it again for like the millionth time at the moment. So I guess why I put it on the list, because I'm currently watching it. And the third one is like my all time. If I had to pick a show that I could watch, like, and you get like one show, it would be like just nostalgic for me. It's a Channel 4 comedy set in Ireland called Father Ted. Father Ted is about like a bunch of priests that live on this fictitious island, and they're all useless at their job. And it's humor that I can almost understand. Like, if you guys watched it over in Canada or in the States, that you were like, I don't get it. I think it's really set towards like dry Irish, like kind of humor. And it's a lot of it is outdated now, but I can quote the whole thing start to finish all three seasons. Like, I just absolutely love it. So check it out if you want, but don't be shocked if you don't like it. And the other two, I have two more serious ones. I'm sure everyone said this one, but I got up at Breaking Bad in there, just along with Better Call Saul, right? It's both.
I'll be honest, not enough people mentioned Breaking Bad.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh man.
In my mind, everyone should say at least once an episode, but yeah, it's it'll be mentioned, but it won't be mentioned as often as you and I are expecting it to. So.
Oh wow, I'm surprised. I think it's a masterpiece, and Better Call Saul as well. I absolutely loved that too, like the whole thing. Yeah, Breaking Bad, like so many like iconic television moments just in like Breaking Bad alone. I think it has to be like in there. I don't get too many people give up on it, I think, right?
I think it's designed purposely. That's season one is kind of almost snail pace, really difficult to get through those first four or five episodes, but the payoff by episode six is quite literally and figuratively explosive. So it
I think I told my girlfriend that. I was like, season one, nothing really happens, don't worry about it. And she's like, the guy like melted through the bath and you told me like nothing. I was like, sorry, yeah, I forgot that.
They're just getting started, man.
It's like, there's more, don't worry, there's more to come. But yeah, Breaking Bad definitely in there for me. The last one is a show, it's called The Newsroom, written by the same people who wrote The West Wing. It kind of follows just like a news channel. It has, if you want to watch it, if you put on YouTube, put on I think there's a new episode of Solid. Did not know that. I will check
Jamie,
it out.
Jamie's breaking news for us here with a new episode of Better Call Saul. We better watch Saul.
Absolutely, yeah. Do you know, quick story actually about Better Call Saul. My dad, right, My dad was like claims that he watches TV, but he gets back from the farm and he falls asleep on the couch like every day. And he like tells me, "Oh, I've watched all of that." It's like, "Oh, you've watched Better Call Saul." He's like, "Yeah." He's like, "Oh, you must like love the main character." He's like, "Saul." I'm like, "Yeah, but like he's not." It was when it first came out. He's like, "He's not called Saul yet." It's like, "Is he not?" I'm like, "No." He's like, "What's he called?" He's like, "He's called Jimmy McGill." I was like, "That's your name. That's my dad's name." Like, it's like, don't tell me you've watched the show and the main character's got the same name as you. You didn't notice. Like, you were asleep. Didn't see anything.
Ah, all right, yeah, Mags McGill. But yes, well, just to continue on the point, part of what I was talking about earlier, like Peep Show, what intrigues me is how it's filmed. I think Breaking Bad has so much of that. How it's so many scenes are just so perfect in terms of how they're filmed.
Yeah, like zooming in on the flower, like at the end of the episode, like that's
Oh
beautiful, right?
yeah, right. The end of season four finale. I think of
Yeah.
stuff like even the when Badger's first arrested,
Yeah.
that whole sequence is 4 minutes and it's a continual shot. And I love stuff like that, where it's just
Yeah,
him and
me
the
too.
undercover cop on the bench, and it's literally just that shot. And you get a zoom out, slight zoom out when the cops and the undercover flower van come, which he called.
Yeah.
But stuff like the season four premiere, Box Cutter, how
Yeah, it's like
Krings in
and
the
it
room
tilts on. Yeah.
for I think like 10 minutes without saying anything. Like it literally
Yeah.
times of 10 minutes of episode time, and he doesn't say a single word, but his presence is so powerful that whole time.
And he
Everyone
gets
else is
the.
talking around him and panicking, and he just it just stuff like that. Like not too many shows pull stuff
Awesome.
off like that. And that's why I think it totally
Yeah.
deserving.
Absolutely. And like where like obviously the power of like Fring's silence or the newsroom's almost like the exact opposite. I think it's Aaron Sorkin is the name of the writer, and it's just like line after line after line after line, and it's just go. I guarantee you will want to watch. Go watch. Type in a YouTube newsroom opening scene. It is the greatest opening scene in film or television history. It is unbelievable. Like it's one of the. You may have seen it already. Even it's the guy gets asked, "Is America the greatest country in the world?" And his answer is amazing. So go check it out.
All right, news to us. But then we go from TV shows to movies. And yeah, I usually like to keep the last question for specific for the guests. And then I kind of got this idea of, oh yeah, so I kind of used my typical questions, but kind of reworked them a little bit. So part of the fantasy rewind. So what are your top five movies that you can rewind in order to rewatch? Or if you're renting, because you should be polite and rewind, but I guess that's not really a thing anymore.
The first one for me is Anchorman. I watch Anchorman on my birthday every year. I can't not watch it. I once had an Anchorman themed birthday where I went for a pancake breakfast because that's mentioned in the movie. They go for the pancake breakfast. They do it every year. Then I had a nice seafood dinner, which they threatened to take Dorothy Mantooth out for a nice seafood dinner. And then I had ribs for lunch because that is a scene when Ron is picking ribs out of his teeth. So yeah, I had a full Anchorman themed birthday party with those three meals thrown in between. So it's one I know every single line, like start to finish. My girlfriend hates me for it. Like every year we put it on, she's like, "Will you shut up? Let me watch the movie." I'm like, "Nah, like it's my birthday. I can do what I want. Like I gotta do this every year." So I love that.
Do you have Peruvian flute jazz playing for your birthday all day as well?
Absolutely. Yeah, you have to have Yaz flute on in the background for sure. Like it's very important. And yeah, some aqualung as well in there. Like, yeah. So I love love
Definitely.
Anchorman. The second one's okay. Second one's okay, but the first one is the real. That's where my birthday party kicks in. And the next one is a movie called The Big Short, which I
Another
could
Steve Carell
watch.
movie.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that actually. I think Adam McKay maybe is on the right, the same director. I think he's maybe on the team as well. But I just think that it is shot so well, and it's like so. I always notice something else every time I watch it. I think the acting in it is really good. Ryan Gosling is such an underrated actor. I think he's very, very good. So yeah, I think it's an easy movie to watch. I like how they cut away and explain things. I like whenever movies break the fourth wall as well, I think. So that was a big one for me, The Big Short. And yeah, just like
Apparently
funny,
there'll be an
entertaining.
Anchorman 3,
Yeah.
or there's talks about an Anchorman 3. So Jamie's breaking more news for us. So really appreciate you showed up when you did, Jamie, because you've already
Yeah.
given us so much to work with.
This is great, Jimmy. Yeah, Anchorman 3. I could get on board with that. They've made a second one. Why not make a third one, right?
Trilogy. Everyone loves trilogies.
Exactly, yeah. The other, I've got three more. I've got the original Guardians of the Galaxy movie. That's my favorite of all of the Marvel ones to watch. Again, the music in it is like amazing. Like Blue Swede, Hooked on a Feeling in there. You've got Come and Get Your Love on there. You've got Ain't No Mountain High Enough on there. You've got some absolutely amazing, you know, pieces of music. So
almost like it's a one that's rewind.
Yeah, exactly, right. So it's easy to watch, and yeah, the storyline's really good. And like I said, I'm into all that Marvel stuff as well. So that does help. Next one, very different kind of movie, The Departed, classic, yeah. Right? Just like I could watch that once a week and just be happy. I was torn between a couple of like those kind of movies where it's a bit more vile. I didn't want to just throw in too much violence in it. So I was like, do I put Goodfellas? Do I put The Departed? I was like, I'll put in The Departed. I think I prefer that over Goodfellas, but only just. It's very close between those two. That was another one my girlfriend watched. She's like, oh, I can't believe it. Like doesn't like the ending of it because of what happens at the end. But I'm like, that's the best bit. Like, yeah, so.
The movie's called The Departed.
Exactly, yeah. So what do you think was going to happen? But yeah, love that movie. And like all the actors in it, you're just like, guys are so
that's good. That's a cast.
Yeah, absolutely. So anything with those guys in it, I'll try and watch it. And then in my last one is, in my opinion, but not the opinion of many, because I know we're going to get a lot of people shouting, but maybe as a Canadian, you'll agree with me. The greatest sports movie ever made, The Mighty Ducks, is fantastic and great viewing all the time.
It's funny, because I have a friend who is Canadian, obviously, I'm at university, and her favorite movie of all time is The Mighty Ducks. So not just favorite sports movie, but favorite movie. So she would agree with you. So you've got at least one person that agrees with you.
Gordon Bombay, talk about earlier, who are my heroes in life, my inspiration? Coach Gordon Bombay, put him in there. That man is a saint, like he's a legend.
Hey, you talked about the influence of sports, right? So your influence of coaches.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
All right, so so we talked about the rewindable movies from your, referencing your co-hosting duties on the Fantasy Rewind, or the Wild Card Rewind, I should say. And then we've got the Dynasty Hot Seat, which is your show, your creation. Yes. So we're going to go with the top five hot seat game day foods.
Wow. So this is a cool one. I'm going to try and like talk about things that, because one of the things I also, maybe people don't also, I kind of mentioned earlier, is I love to cook. So these are all things that I make. So first off, we got, you got to have chicken wings, right? You can't not have chicken wings. Chicken wings. Maybe my favorite food. I think I could have chicken wings every day, but I like mixing them up with, there's a hot sauce by a company called Heartbeat Hot Sauce. It's a pineapple and habanero hot sauce. Ooh. It is delicious. It's not too spicy, despite what you think with a habanero. Go check it out. Really, really tasty. Could have in there pulled barbecue pork nachos with, you know, all the toppings on there as well. Again, can't go wrong with nachos. In terms of like little sliders, I make some nice burgers that I make a sort of a blue cheese and jalapeno sauce. And just before you serve it, you just dip the whole burger in that and coat it. And then you put it in your bun. And it is good. Like very tasty. Keeps everything nice and juicy. Then there's a thing, I don't know if it's called this in North America, jalapeno bombers. You know, is
that I think we call them poppers. But
poppers,
it's
yeah.
Fried jalapeno with cheese inside and...
Yeah, so the trick is I always use like goat's cheese. So you have goat's cheese with like jalapenos in it, make like a sphere, cover it in breadcrumbs, fry it. Delicious. Like really, really nice. Nice with maybe like a little taco sauce, like with extra paprika, a bit of spice in there as well.
So that jalapeno bombers is what you call it in
Bombers, yeah. The poppers, I've heard poppers as well, but this specifically is called a jalapeno bomber.
Well, it's a bit bigger. Well, and I don't know if Jamie knows this, but poppers means something else. So I guess bomber does also mean something else, but I feel like it would be more appropriate to say bombers because it is super hot and like heated. So I almost would prefer if people would say that.
Yeah, I don't know if poppers means the same thing in the UK as it does in Canada, but yeah, it's something you sniff in the UK.
And, it's something you inhale. Well, not, you know, it's something you breathe in Canada.
Yeah, yeah, same sort of thing. All right. So let's move. But and the last thing is, and I've only had a chance to make this once, but I do order it from one of my favorite restaurants, is an ox tongue taco, which is delicious. So it's ox tongue with some pickled red onion and like a green Tabasco tomato, like seared and charred. And it's tasty, really tasty. All five of a bit of heat, all five, really tasty.
Awesome. And all five are making me really hungry right now. So Jamie loves the Mighty Ducks too, apparently. Love the Mighty Ducks. Second one is great. Third one is all right. And the show kind of sucked.
Oh, I give up on the show, Jamie. Yeah, it was whenever they revealed the name of the team, like the, that was something stupid, like the never, like the don't try or the don't bother. So I was like, turn this crap off.
Yeah, that's inspiring. The only Mighty Ducks show I remember was the animated show with the alien ducks who played hockey. I loved that.
That was awesome. Yeah.
I kind of like that more than the actual Mighty Ducks movies, to be fair. So that's why I always go to that. And even though that is technically even more improbable. Why are these alien ducks playing hockey?
And the third movie wasn't as good because that had less Bombay in it. You need Bombay. He's the key. He's the heart of Mighty Ducks.
Yeah, heard of Poppers from the Cheech and Chong movie. I think that's kind of what I was thinking.
Me too.
The cartoon. Okay, yeah. The Cheech and Chong cartoon, Jamie, or the Mighty Ducks cartoon? Nice. We're talking Mighty Ducks here, which, again, fits since there's a hockey game tonight, although it's quite a few hours away. But this was a great hour and a half conversation, Mags. Thanks for being so generous with your time. A lot of great answers.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much for having me on, Kyle. This is a great concept, great idea. And yeah, I just love sharing some stories and yeah, just getting to know you a bit as well. Hopefully everyone enjoyed.
Yeah, and likewise, getting to know more about you. And of course, if people want to know more and see more from you, where can they find and follow you?
Yeah, so you can catch me mainly over on Twitter at HotSeatMags. If you're into your Dynasty Fantasy Football, go check out the Dynasty Hot Seat on Twitter and mostly on YouTube. If you want most of the content, then you want to check out the YouTube channel. There's lots of great stuff on there. So head over there and have a look. And if you're not really into fantasy as much, you just like watching the NFL, go check out the Wildcard Rewind where, hey, I'm about to go live in about 5 minutes. So go check it out.
Yeah. All right. Hey, right now, folks, what more convenient time? Head over to the Wildcard Fantasy Wildcard channel, right?
They look Fantasy up Wildcard channel. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Yeah. Looking forward to that. But yes, I won't keep you here too much longer. Just again, quickly, the promo for Underdog Fantasy. You can scan the QR code, use the promo code GF2. And if you are not yet on Underdog, I guess I can keep it up for the whole ad. If you're not yet on Underdog and you sign up using either of these two ways, Underdog will double your deposit match up to $100. So appreciate that. Appreciate Mags for joining me on this episode. And once again, I'm Kyle Senra at Senra Says. I'll be on the Dynasty Gambit Thursday on the Going for Two Live Network. And I'm pretty sure I was talking to Mike, Jamie. I'm pretty sure you guys are doing the cheat sheet tomorrow night. So check out on the Going for Two Live Network, speak on it, and the Fantasy Cheat Sheet. We got two shows for you tomorrow.
Thanks, Jamie.
It should be a great week here on Going for Two Live. Thanks. Thanks again, Mags. This is awesome.
Cheers, man. Thank you.
Yes. And thank you all for watching and listening to this episode of Press Coverage. Bye for now.